Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction and free shipping. And that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Hello and welcome to episode 402 of Geeked Out Radio. I'm your host Dave and I'm back this week with...
To infinity and beyond!
Matt, how are you doing?
I'm doing good, David. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. It's been a couple of weeks since you've been on. What have you been up to?
First of all, it was good to be on the 400th episode with Gray. That was very eventful and that was really, really cool.
Yeah.
Apart from that, I've decided to actually put these from worst to best, these three things that I'm going to be mentioning here. I just thought I'd do it a little bit differently. War of the Worlds is the first of those. So I finished the third season. Mm-hmm. We don't know if there's a fourth. We need a fourth season. But I don't know that I want one. It started off all right. And then, I don't know, because you've got the one main sort of character and he basically knows everything that's going on because of the timey-wimey-ness of what's happened following from the end of the previous season. And he's sounding like, you know, a madman half the season trying to explain this timey-wimey thing to people. And he eventually gets some help from some people and then there's some other timey-wimey stuff that goes on. But for the most part, in like the first half of the season, it makes sense as to what's going on, and you as a viewer knowing what's happened and knowing that he is telling the truth, that connects quite nicely. And then you get this like separate group that's in orbit in sort of space. They're on this like space station sort of thing and they're trying to communicate with people on the ground, and that progresses nicely. So I remember when I came on to Geek Town, not the 400th episode, the one before that, I think I'd mentioned that I was about halfway through the season. I remember saying, you know, it was doing pretty good. It wasn't as good as like the first or second season, but it was doing some good stuff. And then just some other stuff kind of happens and it's sort of like... starts spiraling a little bit and stop sort of, not that it didn't make sense, but it just could have been better than what it was. And we don't know if there's a fourth season. Obviously there's all sorts of things that have happened in the world and whatnot. And then the season ended and it gives you these kinds of, I'll call them pieces, not really scenes, but sort of, well, they are scenes, but pieces of kind of, this is where this character is, this is where this character is, and showing you where they are.
Mm-hmm.
But I wouldn't call many of them, and especially what I would call the main two scenes that they have, I wouldn't really call them endings at all. And they're kind of very sort of, hey, here's what's happening with this character. What's your interpretation of that? And I don't mind the whole what's your interpretation style, as long as there's like better sort of answers. But it's sort of, okay, I understand what's happening to these characters, but that's not really a way to take an ending for their stories. Mm-hmm. So I almost just want sort of like one more episode or something just to kind of, okay, definitive. And it wasn't really like cancel cliffhanger type scenarios. They were sort of, these scenes are laid out in sort of, some of these characters are at peace, some of them have died and all these sorts of things. But for the actual end, and it might not be the ending, maybe they have got a full season plan. We haven't really heard a lot about it, but it's also been... I think this was last year in June. This was that sort of clog of TV that we had last year in June. And we haven't really heard anything since then. So I can't really take it as sort of, oh yeah, that's the ending of the series. That's fine. It was very much a season finale, if anything. And as much as I really, really enjoyed season one and two and thought season three is very different, I don't know if I want another 8 episodes. I don't know if it really needs that much. It just needs like a little end point. So have you seen this third season yet, or are you still...
I kind of know what you're saying because I sort of started with it. I mean, I really struggled to get back into it in this third...
Yeah, it starts off strange, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I just really struggle to get back into it. So I keep on forgetting it's there now. And, I've tried to sort of pick it up again, and then I'm just not engaged with it like I was with some of the other seasons. So, I do sort of want to go back and watch the rest of it. But as you say, at the moment, we've no idea whether it's going to come back or not. It's not being cancelled or renewed right now. So, I don't know.
Yeah. Just do like a streaming film to... But that's right, all it kind of needs, really. So, but we'll see. Again, love the first two seasons. And this third season isn't bad. It's just a lot different. And also just ends in a very just, oh, okay, sort of way. So,
yeah.
I went to watch something on ITVX. Yes, I remembered that it was there, which is a thing. Love and Death, which is what I watched, which is the Elizabeth Olsen, Jesse Plemons series about a true story and stuff. So it's got 7 episodes. Obviously, it's a limited series. It won't be coming back. And the reason I checked this out, first of all, was I saw, oh, Elizabeth Olsen is in a HBO or Max or whatever we're calling it at the moment. I think it was HBO Max when it actually, this series came out. So.
I'm not sure whether they turned it over to Max. It was certainly HBO Max when they commissioned it. Anyway. Yeah,
that was what the logo was. So I thought, oh, that in itself, like, okay, high production, HBO is still doing some good stuff. And Elizabeth Olsen, she's good and everything. Jesse Plemons, that sounds very good. And I didn't really know a whole lot about this actual true story and stuff. And obviously they've adapted bits and things like that. So this is 7 episodes. The shortest episode is about 50 minutes or so. I think this could have been a film. In the parts where it was good and it actually picked up the pace a little bit, it was really, really good. And this isn't sort of HBO putting out something bad. It's just putting out something that had a lot more time than what it needed.
Yes.
And it was like, I got to episodes 4 and then 5 and I was like, oh, I've still got 3 or so left. And then that sort of dragged things out a bit. It was great in the moments that it was good. It just, I really just found it to be very, it didn't help, of course, because there was adverts and that made things a bit longer. It also didn't help to see trailers for Big Brother.
But no, that never helps.
Yeah. I didn't want to sign up for the whole free thing majig because I knew I wasn't going to use ITV afterwards anyway. So
right.
The best thing about it is the performances, which was kind of what I was expecting. You put people like Kristen Ritter, Jesse Plemons, Elizabeth Olsen. They've all been on a number of really good things, 2 of which, of course, on Breaking Bad, and obviously Elizabeth from the MCU and some other stuff. So on an acting showcase front, it was really, really excellent. That was sort of some of what I was there for. The story itself is fine. It is pretty sort of straightforward and it sort of goes through that and it does tell that very well. It's just given far too much time for it. So have you seen this then?
I haven't, no. I kind of looked at it and thought, that looks like it might be kind of interesting, but I had suspicions that it might have been one of those things that they dragged out over more episodes than it needed to be. Mm-hmm. So I'd avoided it. And I think I read some reviews of it that were kind of middling and I thought, well, I might go and look at it, but it's not really leap out at me necessarily. So, and I, like you, forget that ITVX is there sometimes. So it's rare that I actually go and click on it, which is the usual problem with these things.
Yeah. Last thing I finished, I finally caught up with The Handmaid's Tale, the 5th season?
Yes.
Fifth, something like that. Yeah. This feels like it's had 10 seasons. Sometimes. I know. It does. It feels like so much stuff has happened. So it's still got the problem, and I get why it does do it. It is still very, very self-indulgent at a lot of points. And it's been like that the whole way through. It's sort of part of Handmaid's Tale's DNA. I think while this show is sort of due to end and, we'll sort of just want to get there, and I've wanted to get there in terms of, seeing these characters, particularly June, just finally have peace after just everything that's happened. I think this season had the best content, specifically this stuff between Serena and June, and I'm not going to spoil it obviously still, but just everything that happens there, particularly that one episode later on in the season, that was a really good way for them to kind of, instead of just kind of doing the same thing over and over again, which Handmaid's Tale did get into a bit of a loop of, and that was where, some people got a bit tired of it, and I understand that. You finally kind of move, it's still reflected on like those sorts of moments and scenes, but the show finally managed to kind of move past that somewhat and actually reflect on it in a better way with the scenes between these two characters. And I thought that was probably some of the best stuff The Handmaid's Tale has done. So while it's a case of another 10 episodes to go through and then another final season after this and then see what this spin-off's about, while there's still some of it to go, I felt like it put out some of its best content in this season. And it was a really, really good end to the season as well. Once you get to the end of the season, you kind of realize, okay, there's still obviously The Handmaid's Tale stuff in there and still the Gilead parts and those sorts of things, but it finally feels like it's at least moving forward a bit, which I guess if you're heading towards your final season, you do need to move forward at some point. So I don't know if this was like my favorite or sort of best season, but in terms of this, some of the stories that they do, especially between those two characters, I thought was some of its best stuff so far. You finished this a while ago, didn't you?
Yeah, so. I enjoyed the season as well. As you say, it gets very self-indulgent in places, which is its biggest problem. But overall, I did enjoy this season. I do think it is at a point where they need to wrap it up. So I'm kind of glad they announced the next season is the last season.
Yeah. So aside from that, what have you been doing?
Well, I mean, there's the Loki series, of course, which is still running on Disney Plus. We got a return of an old face in the latest episode, which was interesting to see in a slightly different version of that character. I'm enjoying it. It is running at a sort of 100 miles an hour, and I think it's quite fun. As we were talking about with Bex last week, it is really packing a lot into sort of 40-minute, 50-minute episodes. But I love the bouncing backwards and forwards between the characters. I think it is one of the stronger things that they've done for MCU TV shows in a while. So overall, I am quite enjoying the series so far.
Yeah, I've been enjoying it as well. Obviously, there's a lot of timey-wimey stuff going on, which is pretty standard. It was good to see that person back as well. We know about, obviously, all the variants and different things. I was kind of wondering when they'd pop back up and what that would even look like. Of course, we're dealing with somebody who's supposed to be different to Thanos, which is the whole point. That was quite good. But yeah, we're halfway through and I'm curious to see kind of where it goes. It's interesting that you've been able to choose Loki for this show. And, like, you know, we have to remember that this is a developed version of the 2012 Loki that tried to steal, obviously, yes, the Tesseract from the first or second Avengers film. The first one, yes.
Yes.
Of course, he's the villain in that one, rather than the one that survives till later, because that version's not around anymore. But hey, you still get Loki, so that's quite cool. Because I don't know really that many other characters in the MCU would fit the slot of the particular thing they're trying to do with Loki. So I think that's been kind of an interesting choice. But yeah, I'm just curious to see what they'll do with Kang and how, like, the different variant stuff will work as well. Because as we know from Ant-Man and the Wasp, there's, like, basically unlimited versions of him. I mean, that's the whole idea behind the multiverse, right? Is there's unlimited versions of everybody. Just like we saw over the years with Wells on The Flash.
Yes.
Bring in another one. So we'll see where it goes, yeah. But I've been enjoying it so far.
I think they've been doing a good job with it so far. I thought this episode was pretty solid. I don't know where they're going to end this series, because they're sort of dealing with the fallout of the end of the last series, with messing around with the timeline and the fact that it's wildly out of control at the moment. So I think it's been good though so far, so I am enjoying that. Gaming wise, I think I'm at a point that I'm actually going to put Starfield down after about 300 hours. So I've done a couple of new game pluses with it. As you may or may not be aware, with Starfield, with the normal new game plus, which is where you kind of get to play through again but keeping some of your progress, the new game plus in Starfield is actually built into the story. So it's a bit more encouraging you to go through the new game plus. And I've done a couple of iterations of those, as well as playing through the main story a couple of times as well. So I'm sort of at a point where I think I'm probably going to leave it until things have settled and they've got some expansions out and that sort of thing. I may kind of walk away from a bit, and also because City Skylines 2 comes out today as well, so I will be diving into that. I have been messing around a bit with Cyberpunk 2077 in the sort of interim period since I put Starfield down, because they have an expansion pack out called Phantom Liberty, which I haven't started yet because it's been so long since I played the original Cyberpunk, and there's a massive massive 2.0 update for it as well. And there's been other bits and pieces. So I kind of thought, you know what, I'm just going to play through it from the start again, because...
That's what they recommended, actually, CD Projekt Red.
Right, okay. Because I played through it once when it first came out, and that was all good. But I kind of left it ever since then. So I'm going kind of back into it almost completely fresh, because I've forgotten a lot of the plot points and bits and pieces. Starting it again from scratch. I will be breaking off that, though, to go and play Cities Skylines 2. But overall, enjoying jumping back into that as well. Starfield itself, it's a great basis for a game. And there are lots of things you can do in that game. I had a lot of fun with it. But for a game that's been in development for, what, almost 10 years, you kind of think this doesn't feel like they've quite finished it. There are so many dangling plot threads of things that, you know, you'll have a conversation with somebody. Like, there's a bunch of companions which are part of Constellation, the explorer group that you initially join. And there are a bunch of other named companions that you can pick up along the way, who are sort of secondary companions that you can use to put on your ship and help you out with things and that sort of stuff. And the secondary companions, they've got lovely bits of sort of conversation you can have with those that add texture to the game. But in those conversations, they'll express sort of aspirations of the fact that they want to explore the galaxy, or they'll mention something. Like, one guy mentions that, you know, he's got a family on a particular planet, and they sort of feel like they should lead up to little quests off that, of you to go and take them with you to explore somewhere, or, you know, take them to visit their family. And there's no follow through on any of that. And I mean, the conversations are fine as sort of conversations, but you sort of feel like, well, they didn't take that to its logical conclusion. And there's so many points in that game where they've not taken it to its logical conclusion. Like, I don't think it's a spoiler to say that you have companions so you can romance them and you can get married to some of them. But there is a perk that you can get for your character called Kid Stuff, which puts your parents in the game. So you get visited by your parents every so often, and you can go and visit them, and they live in this apartment. But when you get married, you can't invite the parents to the wedding. And even if you go there with your then wife afterwards, or husband afterwards, there is no way to make any reference to the fact that this is your partner, even though when you first go home, your mother asks if you've got anybody special. You know, so it's like there's just no follow through in so many of the world building. So it sort of feels like they ran out of time, which is weird given the thing has been going for like 10 years. It's not that what is there is bad. In fact, what is there is really good fun. I mean, I've put, as I say, almost 300 hours into it. I really, really enjoy playing what's there. It's well worth it. Go and get it. It is a great fun game. But there are points which you look at and go, that's a really odd decision that they've not finished off that thought, you know?
Yeah.
You've not jumped into this yet, have you?
I did for about a couple of hours, and I wasn't really a fan of was there. And this does feel like another Cyberpunk/No Man's Sky, where like, okay, we'll meet, if we come back to this in 3 years, it will be the finished game. Well, not really the finished game, but the full game, because I totally understand what you mean. And there was this things I noticed when I was playing that didn't really, they feel like the ideas was there, but it didn't really feel fully sort of complete. I personally, I carried on with Lies of P after I did that, which I got past a really difficult boss, which was good to do. And today I'm going to start Spider-Man 2. So that's my gaming side of things.
Yes, so. I would play Spider-Man 2, but I don't have a PS5. So Starfield, I would recommend it as a game, but there are some really bizarre decisions in there that will have you looking at it going, why is that like that? Like, why is that done that way? That doesn't make the most logical sense. It got 8 out of 10 reviews in a number of places, and people were kind of going, oh, that seems, so yeah, it should be a 10 out of 10 game. And no, I think that is fair as an 8 out of 10 game. It is by no means a bad game. It's a fun time. I very much enjoyed it. I'm also very interested to see what it looks like 5 years from now. You know, there is going to be a lot going on with Starfield for years to come, I suspect. But the base game is enjoyable, but it does feel like a base game. On the TV side of things, I've been watching through Cobra Rebellion, which is the political drama that is on Sky with Robert Carlyle in the lead role as the Prime Minister. Rebellion is the third season, and it is based around the fact that the government are building this high-speed rail underground, and it's going through a village, and there's a bunch of eco-protesters that are trying to stop it, and things go badly wrong at the site. That's all I'll sort of say about it at this point. I really rather enjoy what they're doing with it. It's a good, solid political thriller. It's got a great cast. Robert Carlyle, Victoria Hamilton, Jane Horrocks, who is a sort of key character in this season as well. But yeah, good, solid drama. It is all up on Sky On Demand and on Now if you want to go and catch it there. But that's the third season of Cobra. I started watching the Frasier revival as well, which is on Paramount Plus, which is really interesting because, I mean, these revival things can go various ways, you know. there's a lot of shows that they've tried to sort of bring back. This one follows Frasier back to Boston because he was in Seattle for many, many years. It's just following the death of his father, who has passed away, and he's come back to Boston to sort of start a new chapter in his life, trying to reconnect with his son, ends up lecturing at a university, and it's pretty much a sort of, you know, just continuation of the TV series. Kelsey Grammer's great as Frasier. You've got an interesting new cast around him. They've roped in Nicholas Lyndhurst, the well-known British actor, who plays...
Rodney.
Yes, Rodney, who plays Alan Cornwell, who is a friend of Frasier's from college, and he's also a very lazy professor at Harvard working in the same department as Frasier. And they're sort of friends, but, you know, very, very different in terms of characters. You've got Tox Olgolundi, I think her name is, who is the head of the department, who is great as well. Jake Cutmore-Scott, who plays Freddie Crane, Frasier's son. Anders Keith, who plays David Crane, who is the son of Niles and Daphne. And then there's Eve, who is Freddie's friend, who lives across the hall from them. It's sort of an interesting setup because they've not directly replaced the characters that are missing from the original show. So, like, Niles' son isn't really a direct replacement of Niles, and Alan Cornwell isn't really a direct replacement of Niles, Nicholas Lyndhurst's character, which I think some people assumed that might be the role that he fills. There are elements of Niles in David Crane, Frasier's nephew, and Niles' kid, but he's not a direct carbon copy, but there are hints of him there, which you'd expect because it's Niles' child. And with Frasier's son, Freddie, who is a firefighter, there are elements of the grandfather because he sort of fits into that role, but it's not anywhere near a sort of identical because the dynamic is different because Frasier's the father and he's the kid. So they've done a nice job of making it sort of familiar but different, kind of massage this interesting new group around them. It's got three episodes out at the moment. I've been really quite enjoying it. There's 10 episodes in the first season. If you like the original Frasier, I think you'll probably like this as well. But I think they've done a decent job with it so far. Did you ever watch any of Frasier? Because, I mean, they ran it endlessly on Channel 4 for years.
Yeah, I remember coming across those. I've seen, like, chunks of episodes, but I've not seen it properly, you know, from the pilot or something. I remember liking what I saw, though, although it's been a long time since I sort of caught one of those reruns. Sounds kind of interesting. It's good to see, obviously, Nicholas Lyndhurst again since Fools and Horses and stuff. Obviously, he's done other bits since then. Like, that was a long time ago. But no, it sounds good. But no, obviously, if I was to jump into this, I'd rather go back from the pilot and then do it all properly.
Yeah, and there's a lot of the original Frasier to get through.
How many seasons were there? Was it like an 8 or 10 season thing?
11 seasons.
Oh.
And there were 24 episode seasons as well. So there's a lot to get through if you go back to the original. And I mean, if you want to really follow the character, you've got to go through the whole of Cheers before that as well, because that's where the character came from. So I mean, it's character that Kelsey Grammer has been playing for a very, very, very long time. I mean, basically his entire career. I do think they've done a decent enough job with this. It doesn't fall as flat as some of the revival things have done. Certainly, I think, one to take a look at. And the other thing that I've been watching is a show called Bodies, which is on Netflix. This I've been really rather enjoying. Bodies is a crime drama with a twist. It's actually based on a graphic novel by Cy Spencer, and it's got a really good cast. The setup for it, there are four detectives who are in four different time periods of London, but they find themselves investigating the same murder, which is an unidentified body that lands in a particular street in Whitechapel. But in every time era, the body appears to be absolutely identical. And it's then this sort of conspiracy theory that lasts sort of 150 years. It's 1890s, 1940s, and 2010s, so the sort of key time periods. I don't really want to give much more away than that at this point, other than you've got this intriguing sort of murder of seemingly the same body appearing in these various different time periods. It's written by Paul Tollerlin, who wrote on No Offence and Shameless and Torchwood, so decent CV behind him. The directors behind it worked on things like The Lazarus Project and Doctor Who, so it's good directing team. It's a really solid series. I'm one episode to the end, so what I can't tell you is whether they managed to land the ending or not. But it's eight episodes. The seven I've seen so far, I've been really quite enjoying, and keeps you guessing on to sort of how the crime things are connecting and all this sort of stuff. It's called Bodies. It's on Netflix right now. It's eight episodes. I would say it is worth going to check out. If you like crime thrillers, I think this is certainly one that I would suggest you go and check out. Bodies on Netflix. Go and take a look at that.
So is that a limited series, or does it need to be renewed?
That is a limited series as well.
Okay.
So you've also got the advantage that Netflix can't cancel it because it's a limited series.
Yeah, that's what we hope for now. So,
yes, sadly true. So that's all the stuff we've been watching this week. Let's move on to some TV and film news.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
So we kick off the TV and film news with renewals, cancellations and pickups. Elite on Netflix has been cancelled. Ending, I think, is probably fairer because it's done eight seasons, which is fairly substantial for Netflix. It's the Spanish series, but that is coming to an end.
It's very popular.
It is extremely popular.
When I see people talking about it, they really, really love it.
Yeah.
But I've not personally jumped on it.
Neither have I. Not so much cancelled as ending, I think, that it has been given a proper final season. BBC have cancelled Doctors after 23 years, which is the daytime drama / soap / serialised medical thing. They're basically saying that it's a cost-cutting measure. It sounds like the facilities that they shoot Doctors in is falling to bits and it needs refurbishing, and they were looking at the numbers for it and they just said it's just not practical for us to completely refurbish the place and keep the show running. It just doesn't make any sense. So unfortunately they've said that they're ending it after 23 years. The money that they are saving by not doing that, because it's shot in the Midlands, they are ploughing that money back into other projects within the Midlands. So the money will be actually staying local. It's just the show will unfortunately be going. And whilst I've never watched it, it is well known as a training ground, not only for actors, but also for directors and writers. And I mean, I'm sure there'll be other shows that will do that. And you know how we say, like, every Australian actor comes through Neighbours or Home and Away?
Right, soap actors can tend to do that,
Yeah, Doctors is very much something that did the same sort of thing in the UK. So, like, early TV spots for Eddie Redmayne, Richard Armitage, Nicholas Hoult, even before he went and did About a Boy, Tom Ellis, Phoebe Waller-Bridge, Claire Foy, Emilia Clarke, all people that got one of their early acting gigs was in Doctors.
Some big names there.
Yeah, I mean, people that have gone on to be in huge, huge things. And it's the same with people that have shot behind the camera as well. It's very much being a training ground for people. So from that point of view, I will be very sorry to see it go, because I think it shows like this are quite important, because you need places like this where people can get a foothold and learn some of their craft to move on to other things.
It's funny when we get to like the soap awards each year, arguably the big ones are kind of EastEnders and it's debatable what the other one sort of is. The one of the ITV ones.
Corrie, probably.
Then you've got Emmerdale. Then you've got Hollyoaks there. And Doctor's always kind of felt like that extra fifth one. And usually a genuine sort of surprise when they pick something up, but it's sort of like, oh, they picked up a little best storyline or something like that. Obviously, there's a lot of different awards. I know it's kind of one that was on the side a bit more, but it will be sad to kind of like not have it around at all anymore. Because where you have these on at sort of 7, 8-ish o'clock, these sort of soaps used to air at sort of 2 in the afternoon.
Yeah, and it's a daytime soap.
And I know that people can catch up on iPlayer and that sort of thing, but it might affect its live ratings, and that might have, I don't know. It was always kind of one that was just a bit more on the outside to all the other ones.
It isn't one of the evening soaps. It's a daytime soap, which means it comes out of the daytime budget, which is a slightly different pot of money. It is a lot cheaper to produce and have a lot less spent on it than something like EastEnders, but it had a very interesting function in that although it was enjoyable for audiences, they enjoyed it for what it was, because Neighbours used to air in that sort of time slot as well as airing sort of 6 p.m. or something. It was something that was sort of in that sort of soapy kind of time slot, but it had this interesting extra function of being this kind of training ground for people getting into the industry. So I'm sure something else will come along and pick that up. I mean, prior to Doctors, the things like The Bill used to be a place where, when that was still around, that was a place where people used to pop up. And I mean, it's the same with some of the soaps as well. You know, people do pop up in parts in sort of guest runs and stuff on some of the bigger soaps, or Hollyoaks as well. It's something where people kind of pop up in and then go on to do other stuff.
Either that, or they go from EastEnders to Hollyoaks, back to EastEnders, then maybe cup up on another one or something. But even that being said, with how small Doctors is and stuff, 23 years is nothing to laugh at. That's a heck of a long time to be able to still stay on TV. So it did very well.
It did. And as I say, I'm sure something else will come along.
Do you think anybody else will pick it up?
No, I don't think that's likely at all.
Not like a Neighbours situation.
I don't see that particularly as being likely, but I think something else will probably come along. I don't know what exactly they're planning to do with the money, other than they've said it's staying in the West Midlands, whether that will get ploughed into another drama or whether that will get ploughed into other projects within the West Midlands. I don't know. Just to say, sad to see it go, just because of the outweighted importance it had as a training program more than anything else. Moving on to Channel 4, they've cancelled Steph's Pat Lunch. That's after 3 seasons, so that has gone. Over in America, Transplant, the medical drama, that is coming to an end after 4 seasons. That's actually a Canadian show. It's sort of shared between CTV in Canada and NBC. I think we've aired 2 seasons of it over here, and I don't think the third one has ever actually aired. It was on Sky Witness, I think. So I don't know whether they're going to air the third season or not, but it's apparently ending on season 4. And the problem with Jon Stewart, which was the Apple TV Plus series which he did, apparently was geared up for a season 3. Then Apple have now dropped it because of creative differences between John and Apple. It sounds like the problem was that, if you've not seen the problem with Jon Stewart, he basically tackles a specific subject each week. So it's the problem with war, the problem with the stock market. And the things that he was looking at for the new season were AI and China. And you can sort of see why Apple maybe is slightly uncomfortable with him laying into things like that, because they have quite an involvement in both. So I think the problem was that Apple were trying to overstep and trying to say, oh no, you can't do that. And he basically went, screw you, and decided Apple was probably not the best place for him. Unfortunate that, but you don't mess with Jon Stewart. He's a man with a lot of integrity. And kind of a bit disappointed in Apple if that is the case, and they actually were trying to stop him from producing things. But hopefully Jon Stewart pops up somewhere else, because, I mean, he's great. And I would like to see him back on TV regularly again. But that has gone. I take it you didn't see any of those.
No, I'm guessing this is one of them, like, talk show sort of...
Yeah, things. Very much the sort of Daily Show kind of thing. Or last
week.
Can
I just go and do the same thing for a different channel then?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely he could if somebody will pay him to do it. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, he could do it on YouTube probably.
That would be quite easy, yeah, I suppose.
The show was pretty good. I don't think it was as good as some of the other stuff that's out there, which is a shame because, I mean, John is great. I just don't think the format quite landed as well as it possibly could. Mm. The pinnacle of those at the moment is Last Week Tonight with John Oliver, who absolutely is amazing at this sort of stuff.
The only time I sort of see one of them types of shows is when there's like a 10-minute segment of something particular pops up on YouTube, let's say. So like when they had on Jonathan Ross, when like Bella Ramsey was on there or something, she talked about Last of Us for 5-10 minutes, and I would like check those bits out. I'm much more likely to do that than actually watch like the whole things.
That is the case with this show as well. There are segments of it that were up on YouTube, and in the same way that they put bits of The Daily Show up and they put bits of Last Week Tonight up. So I'm sure John Oliver will pop up somewhere else again because, you know, he's John Oliver, so we'll see. But yeah, there'll be no season 3 of it on Apple. Moving on to the renewals, Sweet Magnolias renewed for season 4 by Netflix, so that will be coming back. Gen V renewed for season 2 on Prime Video. We're actually just about getting to the episode this week I can actually dive back into because we were given the first 6 episodes on preview. So I've been waiting patiently for it to come round so I can watch the last couple of episodes. It's the same with Lower Decks. I think Lower Decks has just hit the point where the last few episodes were missing off the preview things, so I think probably so we couldn't accidentally spoil anything. This week, I think both of those shows are now caught up to the point where I can jump back into them, which I'm really looking forward to because I love both of them. But yeah, Gen V, I think, has been great. I'm looking forward to jumping back on that. Fake or Fortune is renewed for season 12 on the BBC, so that will be coming back. And The Hit List has been renewed for season 7 on the BBC as well. In pickups and other news, Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? You may have seen things after the whole Clarkson Meghan Markle debacle. There was talk of them cancelling it or changing the host. Not true. Apparently, ITV have basically said they are contractually committed, whether they like it or not, to making more seasons of it. So Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, due to the rugby, there won't be a season this year because the rugby is airing when it would normally be on. So they've pushed this season, which has already been recorded, that's been pushed to 2024. So that's going there. Shetland, the drama, now has an air date. This has got Ashley Jensen as the new lead. That's coming Wednesday, the 1st of November at 9 p.m. on BBC One. So that's returning. And NCIS Sydney now has a home as well. This is the latest NCIS spin-off. It's the first one that's not based in America. Friday, the 10th of November, it's on Paramount Plus UK. Cue a lot of people going, oh, why can't they all be in one place? And yes, I know it's annoying. Although in this particular case, it was specifically co-commissioned by Paramount Plus. So it's not entirely unsurprising that Paramount Plus are the people that are airing it internationally. I think it was originally made for Network 10, who I think were the people that originally had Neighbours. They picked this up. It's only a 10-episode season. It's not like a full 22-episode run. But Paramount stepped in as the partners for it, so they're actually airing it internationally. I think it's going out on CBS in the US, but it is going out on the same day everywhere as well, I think. NCIS Sydney will be landing on Paramount Plus UK. Over on Disney Plus, they announced their November dates, and there were some good things popping up there. Solar Opposites finally back for its fourth season. That's on the 1st of November. They haven't specifically said that this is dropping as a box set, but it rather looks like it probably is because that will be after it's all aired in the US. We don't know, but the way it was sort of phrased, it sounded like it was dropping as a box set. So we'll see. I could be wrong on that, but 1st of November for that. And that, of course, is the first one to have Dan Stevens doing the voice of Corvo as a replacing Justin Roiland, who, of course, has now left the role. Corvo now has a British accent, which, unlike Rick and Morty, where they basically replaced them with sound-alikes, they completely changed the voice of Corvo and basically said, yeah, he's got a British accent now. Here, whatever.
So what actually happened to Like, he got accused of that stuff and then they parted ways. Did we have an update after that? Because I didn't. I just heard that, like, oh, they were replacing him for these roles and then it went dead silent. It
should be pointed out that no criminal charges were ever filed against him for any of that stuff. But it does rather sound that from the reports, he was allegedly kind of a bit of a dick in the office and wasn't really turning up, wasn't really doing an awful lot other than strolling in, recording some voices and strolling out again. In terms of the actual creative process, it sounds like, according to a lot of the reports, that they were alleging that he wasn't really there very much other than to provide the voice.
So he sort of fell out with them.
Yeah. And although there weren't any charges actually brought, by that point, they'd already severed all connection with him anyway.
Right,
and
okay.
To be fair, so he'd not had really any involvement in the writing of the show for a number of years, by the sounds of it. He was really only doing the voices. I mean, I don't know what will happen moving forward, but they've done a reasonable job in finding replacements for the voices for Rick and Morty. Apparently it was getting hammered on, I don't know, Rotten Tomatoes or something for this latest season, but I don't see why, because there's very little difference between what I saw for the opening couple of episodes. And certainly, I mean, unless you're really listening for it, you can't tell the difference in the voice. Solar Opposites, slightly different because of the fact that the voices, it's Dan Stevens and he's English and Corvo will have an English accent. So, you know.
So Justin was doing the voices that they replaced. Mm-hmm. Dan Harmon did the writing, wasn't it?
Well, yes and no. Both of them sort of set up the show. I don't think either of them have that much day-to-day control at this point. I don't think either of them are actually writing that much directly. They may be, I mean, Dan may be popping up and doing bits and pieces, but I don't think, I mean, it was alleged that Justin really had no involvement other than doing the voices at that point.
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I don't think Dan had an awful lot of involvement. It's been written by a lot of other people pretty much for the last few seasons.
Okay.
You shouldn't really see a huge amount of difference as far as I could tell.
I just kind of had wondered what happened to Justin, because after that news came out, like, he just sort of disappeared.
Keeping a low profile, I think, at the moment. Other air dates for Disney Plus: American Horror Story Season 3, that now has a date of the 29th of November.
I really, like, fell off of them shows. Like, I relatively enjoyed that sixth part of Season 10, then Season 11 came out and I was like, oh, okay. And then I never clicked play. And then I watched Stories. That second season was just horribly bad. And then I knew it got renewed for a third season. And it sounds like some people have kind of dropped off from these shows a bit, but there is still loads of these seasons going around. So maybe I'll jump back in at one point, but I don't know. My enthusiasm for them sort of got killed a little bit in the last couple of seasons.
I've seen a few people saying that they're loving season 11 or whatever it is of American Horror Story, the one that's out at the moment. Saying
I think it's 11.
Been quite good. Don't know what this season will be, American Horror Stories Season 3, but 29th of November on Disney Plus if you want to go and check that one out.
Cool.
And Reservation Dogs Season 3, that's on the 29th of November. That's the third and final season of Reservation Dogs. That's on Disney Plus as well. Moving on to a little bit of strike news. As the SAG-AFTRA strike hits, I'd hit day 100 at this point, they have announced that they are returning back to negotiations, because you've remember last week the Hollywood side walked away from the tables. Well, the claim was that SAG wanted a levy on subscribers, was how they put it, of between 53 cents and 75 cents, depending on who you believe. In fact, it was probably quite a lot less than that. SAG say the number is intentionally misrepresented to the press, overstating the cost of the proposal by about 60%. So they were trying to say that basically every year that SAG union wanted to charge 50, 60 cents per subscriber on a streaming service. And they're going, oh no, we can't afford that. That's appalling. That's terrible. Should be noted that this week, Netflix just raised its prices by a pound in the UK to the basic rate and £2 to the premium rate. And that's without the fact that they're giving any more money to the actors. So on one hand, they're going, oh no, it's terrible. We're all poor, which is complete rubbish, as we know. I'm walking away from the negotiations saying that trying to charge customers directly to pay the actors for the content that they're creating would be a step too far. Sorry, but these two things just don't balance at all. It's ridiculous. And it was the Hollywood side that walked out of those talks and like sat on them for a week or so. They are going back in and talking again. Hopefully they'll get further this time without the Hollywood producers all throwing their toys out of the pram once again. On the other potential strike as well, with the video game industry, SAG have resumed talks with the video game industry to try and avoid another strike there. Because, I mean, a lot of the issues with the video game industry are very similar to the issues with TV in terms of AI and image rights and all that sort of stuff. So they are talking both to the Hollywood producers, and hopefully we'll get a bit more of a resolution there. And they are back talking to the game industry, and that's been going on for ages, those talks, on and off talks, but they've been off for a while, so at least they're going back. There was one other little thing that came out, which very funny. It's obviously Halloween coming up, and SAG-AFTRA issued some guidance on Halloween costumes, telling actors not to wear costumes that are from Struck Productions. So going out wearing a Netflix Witcher costume, say, or a Deadpool costume from the movie, something like that. Mm-hmm. Ryan Reynolds then tweeted out, "I look forward to screaming scab at my 8-year-old all night. She's not in a union, but she needs to learn." Which SAG later clarified that they're only issuing this rule against actors and not their children.
I'd hope so.
Children can wear whatever they like. What they're basically saying is don't wear costumes for shows that they're striking against, basically, and because it would be seen as promotion if you take photos and post them on social media and all that sort of stuff. I love Ryan Reynolds and I love that tweet. I mean, it's hilarious.
Corporate greed's a nasty, nasty thing.
Yes.
I've seen greed from all different sides of the industry, whether it's TV, films, football, obviously. Don't get me started on that. But it's gotten particularly, obviously, worse since the whole, I mean, AI's been around for obviously a long time, but this recent kind of thing with it. I saw some footage, by the way, put together. I don't know how real or fake it actually was, and it wasn't like major important. And it kind of had this mock-up kind of thing of, if we went back to do Stranger Things season 5 with AI, and not from writing, but from the actor's point of view, this is what it would look like. And it just looked like a video game that was in extremely early production or something.
Right.
And it's like, no, you can't do that. No one's going to watch that. At the end of the day, hopefully actors get fair pay. That's what we want and need.
Yeah.
It's literally what some people need, because obviously to be able to live and do what they do. As I said, corporate greed is just a nasty thing, and it's a shame that it's gotten this far, really.
Yeah, streaming is the bigger problem at the moment. Mm-hmm. And it's those that are, it's the same with the writers, it's those that are holding things up, and it's those that are causing problems, because the contracts were made prior to streaming basically becoming as dominant as it has. And it's the fact that, you know, we were talking about 24 episode seasons with like Frasier, and this latest season, which is on streaming, is 10 episodes. That massive reduction in the number of episodes obviously has an effect on how much money the actors can make. So you've got a lot of these issues coming to the fore, not just in the fact that they're ordering less episodes, the way the residuals are split for streaming isn't fair, and it's all that sort of stuff that they're trying to work out. So we'll see where they get to this time around, but at least they are talking again, which is good. Moving on to some other news stories, there was a couple of interesting new shows that have been ordered. One of them is for NBC in America, so doesn't have a UK date yet, but I thought it sounded kind of interesting, particularly if you like medical drama. It's based around the story of the late neurologist Oliver Sacks, whose name you might not know, but you may be aware of some of his work. It's called Dr. Wolf. It's going to star Zachary Quinto, who you'll know as Spock from the Star Trek movies, the one that isn't Leonard Nimoy, and Heroes, an American Horror Story, of course. So he's going to take the lead role of Dr. Wolf. Wolf follows revolutionary larger-than-life neurologist Oliver Wolf and his team of interns as they explore the last great frontier, the human mind, while also grappling with their own relationships and mental health. It's based on a series of books that was written by the real-life neurologist Oliver Sacks, called The Man Who Mistook His Wife for a Hat and An Anthropologist on Mars. Oliver Sacks passed away in 2015 at the age of 82, but he's described by the New York Times as the poet laureate of medicine. He wrote about various conditions that were incredibly misunderstood at the time, things like Tourette's syndrome, aphasia, autism, those sort of things, and became the godfather of what he's now known as neurodiversity. He was also the author of the book Awakenings, which actually followed his genuine real-life work on this strange case of finding a bunch of people who were in frozen states unable to initiate movement, and he found a way of waking them up. And this became the basis for Awakenings, the movie, which got Oscar nominated, which starred Robert De Niro and Robin Williams, which is a beautiful and brilliant film if you've never seen it. He wrote the original source material that movie was the dramatized version of. I think he's a fascinating guy. His entire career is full of these really interesting neurology cases. There's been a number of attempts to bring this guy's work to dramatization on TV. This iteration that they finally got to comes from Michael Grassi, who's worked on, Riverdale, but we'll skip over that. Lost Girl and Schitt's Creek he also worked on. It's from Berlanti Productions, so it's Greg Berlanti.
Schitt's Creek is good.
Yes, it's from Berlanti Productions. It's also got involvement from the Imagitarium, which is Andy Serkis's company. They've jumped on board as well, and Fable Entertainment, as well as also the people that are involved. And it's in association with Warner Brothers and Universal Television, which means that there's no obvious place where it would land over here. Because if it was all entirely Universal, you could say, well, that's most likely to land on Sky. But the fact that it's a co-production with Warner Brothers means it could basically go anywhere. But it does feel like something that really, really could land on Sky Witness. It's that right, sort of level of medical drama, I think. Seems like a fascinating story. It feels like it could be a bit sort of House-esque, maybe. Certainly, it's in that kind of area of House, The Good Doctor, you know, that sort of medical drama, I would have thought. Called Dr. Wolf. We'll keep an eye out for it. It will be landing, hopefully, next year, assuming they get all this strike stuff sorted out.
Of course, yeah. Zachary Quinto's great in basically every role that I've seen him in. That's obviously a good choice, first of all, and it sounds good. So, like I said, we'll just see where it lands. But it sounds like a promising one, hopefully.
There could be one to look out for, certainly that, but it's called Dr. Wolf, that one. Back over in the UK, there is some interesting Arthur Conan Doyle content coming. The first one being Mark Gatiss, who is actually producing a thing for Christmas. It's a new Christmas ghost story based on Arthur Conan Doyle's Lot number 249. Which was a short story of his. Mark Gatiss has done Christmas ghost stories the last few years, so this is going to be the latest one. It's the first time he's actually done a Conan Doyle one, and of course he knows Conan Doyle very well because he co-created Sherlock. He's obviously a big fan of his work, and I think he's looking to do this. It revolves around a group of students at Oxford, one of whom undertakes research into the secrets of ancient Egypt and becomes the talk of the college. Expect sort of creepy mummies and that sort of thing in this, but I'm sure it'll be wonderful, but he's producing that for the BBC. It's going to be starring Kit Harington of Game of Thrones and Eternals fame, and Freddie Fox, who you might know from Slow Horses. I think he's also in House of the Dragon and The Crown as well. Great cast for that, and going to be coming this Christmas. Don't know exactly when, but it will be some point over Christmas. I mean, it's kind of late for announcing it yet. I don't know whether they've started shooting it already, but I do think October is quite late for... I hope they've started shooting it, but yeah.
Yeah, some good names in there, so we'll see what that one's like.
There is another Conan Doyle thing coming, which they haven't announced exactly when this is dropping, but it's called Killing Sherlock. It's from Lucy Walsley, who is the historian, author, and presenter. This unearths Sherlock's origins in Conan Doyle's early life as a medical student, unpicks his early stories, and reveals the dark underbelly of late Victorian Britain, from drug use to true crime. She explores Doyle's growing disenchantment with his detective creation and desire to distance himself from Sherlock, and taking the role of detecting himself in one of the most important legal cases of the 20th century. I'm not sure which case she's talking about there, but if it is the one I think it is, it's the one Conan Doyle was involved in, a case which was actually in the village that I grew up in. So...
Oh, wow.
So maybe that one, I don't know. But I think that sounds like it's kind of interesting, certainly if you're a Sherlock Holmes fan. That's going to be called Killing Sherlock. Lots of sort of background about the story between sort of Conan Doyle and Sherlock is going to be quite interesting. Don't know exactly when that's landing yet, but it's going to be made for the BBC at some point in the future. So a couple of interesting Conan Doyle things there for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, certainly.
That's everything we've got this week. Just some time for some highlights for next week on TV. So, highlights for next week. We have What We Do in the Shadows returning for its fifth season. That's on 25th of October. That will be back on Disney Plus. A League of Their Own season 18. That comes to Sky Max on the 25th of October at 9 p.m. London Kills returns at, there's another daytime soap actually, BBC One at the 27th of October at 1:45 p.m. South Park has a new special coming. That's coming to Paramount Plus. That's on the 28th of October. Survivor UK appears. Season one, I think we had a Survivor years ago, but Survivor UK season one, BBC One, 28th of October at 8:25. That's the reality competition which tests brains, brawn, and betrayal as players compete to outwit, outplay, and outlast their rivals to be crowned ultimate survivor. Joel Dommett, I think, is the sort of ringmaster for that. Fellow Travellers, which is a limited series coming to Paramount Plus based on a novel. It's an epic love story and political thriller chronicling the clandestine romance of two very different men in McCarthy-era Washington. Time, season two, which, I mean, the trailer's all over the place for this. This is the Jimmy McGovern drama, which returns for a second season, this time set in a women's prison. Bella Ramsey in this with Jodie Whittaker, 29th of October at 9 p.m. on BBC One for Time, season two. The Gilded Age returns for its second season. That's the Julian Fellowes, Downton Abbey guy drama. That's coming to Sky Atlantic on the 30th of October at 9 p.m. And Gremlins, Secret of the Mogwai, which is an animated prequel to the Gremlins movies, coming to BBC Three on the 30th of October at 7 p.m. It will all be on iPlayer from that date as well, so you'll be able to go and check it out there. That's everything for this week. If people want to find more of you, where can they find you?
You can find me over on entertainmenttalk.org or your podcast platforms of choice. TV, games, films, main night podcasts. Lots of stuff was going on the last couple of days. We unfortunately did lose Sir Bobby Charlton.
Yes.
Over the weekend, which is very sad. One of the, of course, well, one of the biggest legends ever for Manchester United.
And British football.
Yeah, that as well with the World Cup and stuff. One of the Trinity as well, of course, Law, Best and Charlton. So very, very sad to lose him, of course. Thankfully, we did win on the same day. We beat Sheffield United. Made it very difficult for ourselves, but we got there in the end. So that was some good stuff as well. Did a whole bunch of stuff over the weekend. I did a Disney podcast talking about their live action stuff. I did a Pixar podcast talking about what's going on with them. I talked about Netflix because they raised their prices and posed the question of what is Netflix offering us? I reviewed the David Beckham documentary, which was very, very good. Good sort of nostalgic look back at those glorious 90s era and all the treble and all that kind of stuff. The only treble that an English team has won. So we've got that going on. We recently wrapped up with Breaking Bad season 3, which was good to do. Still got gaming talk. And also another video game adaption comes out this week, Five Nights at Freddy's, which will be good for, I guess, Halloween and stuff that comes out. So I should be checking that out. You can follow me as well if you want to on Twitter. There's all sorts of updates and bits and pieces and stuff. That's eTalk UK over on Twitter, but that is me.
Excellent. Should also mention as well, I will be down at MCM Comic Con, which is back in London this weekend from Friday to Sunday. So if you see me wandering around, I will probably be wearing a Geektown t-shirt, so you probably should be able to spot me. Nice. Yeah, I will be around MCM over the weekend, so you can go and find me there. For other people involved in the show, you can find Bex at twitch.tv/TristaBytes. That's B-Y-T-E-S. She's streaming every week over on our Twitch channel. Go and check her out. She's very, very funny over on there. And Daryl, you can find at HollywoodNorthNews.net for all the TV series you love, which are shot in Canada. For us, you can go to the website at geektown.co.uk throughout the week and see the latest air date information. If you want to get in touch with your questions or comments, email us on podcast@geektown.co.uk. Leave a message on the website post. Find us at Geektown on X or Twitter. On Facebook at facebook.com/geektown. On YouTube at youtube.com/geektown. On Blue Sky at Geektown. On Instagram at Geektown UK, on TikTok at Geektown UK, and on Threads at Geektown UK. That is everything. We shall see you next week. Bye bye.
Goodbye.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.